Joining me now is Jerry Reynoldson, a wild horse advocate, a guy who's been a horse person most of his life. I've interviewed Jerry a bunch of times to talk about these issues. He's been directly involved in it since at least going back to 1990 when he helped organize a Senate hearing. That at the time he was employed by Senator Harry Reid in Washington. He also has formed two nonprofit corporations, Wild Horses Forever and Wild Horse Adoption Association of America, to help improve management of this program. Jerry, are you there?
I'm here, George. Good morning.
I wanted to ask you to tackle the same question I gave to Madeline Pickens, who will be is still with us here and will be joining the conversation. You know, to try to explain from your perspective why the average person should care one whit about wild horses.
Well, the wild horses in the West belong to the American public, George. I think that everybody can relate to the wild horses. Madeline mentioned earlier the issue of school children, and I think when you talk about the wild horses, they're as important a part of the history and the evolution of the Western United States as any monument. Any other landmark out here, and I think that any child and many adults are totally fascinated when they come and see them. Unfortunately, not enough actually get to come and see them. The ones that do are truly amazed by the experience. I had an experience, George, with Julian Bond from the NAACP. He was here visiting, and I was asked if I would take him on a tour, and I said, sure, what is it you'd like to see? And he said, I understand that there's wild horses in this area. And I said, well, there are indeed. And at that time, we had just completed a big roundup in southern Nevada, and there were a bunch of them out at Oliver Ranch. And he said, could we go out there? And it was a Sunday, and I took him out there, and we saw him. And he was totally fascinated by this, George. Here's an older gentleman that, you know, had lived a good share of his life already, but had never seen a wild horse, and he was totally amazed by it. And I think this is the experience that most people have when they see them. So that's the reason, George. I mean, they belong to the American public, and the public's fascinated by them, and they're truly fascinated when they get to see them.
And we're paying for them.
Absolutely. It's taxpayers' money that's paid for this program. In spite of its many failures, the taxpayers have been paying them for them for forever. So,
you know that there's one of the arguments that comes up every time I've done a story for television about wild horses is that they're not wild horses. They're not wild animals. They're feral animals. They've escaped. The Spaniards let their horses loose and miners let them loose, and they're not native species at all, and therefore we shouldn't worry about them.
The people that use that, what I consider derogatory, demeaning term, feral, to describe the wild horses, have an agenda. Almost in every instance, you will find they're associated with a wildlife group, with the cattleman group, some group that has an alternative agenda that absolutely does not support the horses, generally for economic reasons. And recently, an official in Nevada put out a letter, and which I happen to have in front of me. And I note that the letter is 10 paragraphs, and the use of feral is used 9 times. And it's simply it's to put these horses down and to create a stigma about these horses and suggest that they don't belong, that there's no place. There's been lengthy studies that have been done by people. Chris Hyde referred to that recently. Dr. Pat Fazio from Wyoming published a paper which he included some of the work that had been done by a woman named Ann Forston, in which they've absolutely established that horses dating back millions of years and the current wild horses are genetically nearly identical. So the myth that they're somehow not wild horses, as I said, is used as a stalking horse for another agenda.
And Madeline Pickens, I guess the idea that, you know, we can, because horses were wiped out in North America for a time, somehow they don't belong here now.
I think it just shows how great their DNA must be because, you know, years ago we used to have dinosaurs and they got wiped out. But so I guess I think that's an amazing story if they got wiped out and they're still here and going strong today. So even more reason to go ahead and save them. It's just such a silly argument that they're absolutely laughable. And, you know, it really does come from, you know, the misfits is what I call them.
People with alternative agendas. Well, I don't know if they're misfits, but, I mean, Jerry, you mentioned wildlife organizations, meaning hunting organizations.
Yeah, they have always been, I think you and I have talked about this before, George. This becomes an argument of one species being superior over another. And in general, when you hear that argument, it means that they're generating revenue from licenses that they're selling to hunt different species of animals. Therefore, they're productive economically, whereas wild horses are not.
Well, Madeline, don't you think then in that sense, if you could get a hunting license for wild horses, that they'd be more protected?
God, I just...
If you could have trophies, you know, wild horse heads on the wall.
The whole thing is so horrific. I mean, I don't even want to discuss it. I just think it's disgusting. I'm just flabbergasted that grown men think that way. I mean, you know, half this world's made up of women, and we just simply won't tolerate it.
So, I think I was being sarcastic there.
You know?
Yeah. I'll tell you what, we're going to take a break. When we come back, I want to talk about your adventures in Washington. Because, Jerry, you've been helping show Madeline Pickens the corridors of power there. And I'd like to tell the audience the kinds of things that you have encountered. Stay with us for more of this discussion about wild horses with Madeline Pickens and Jerry Reynolds on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast to Coast. We're talking about issues regarding the wild horse program managed by the Bureau of Land Management. Not very well, according to Jerry Reynoldson and Madeline Pickens. Jerry, as you travel with Mrs. Pickens and go to Washington and up to the Hill and into the BLM and the Department of Interior, various offices, what have you encountered? What's it been like? I mean, as she described it earlier, you know, initially there was some optimism and support for the program, but it just seems like every time you turn around, someone is backstabbing you on it.
Well, George, the BLM is like any large bureaucracy. You're going to have some very good people there, and then you're going to have a lot of mid-level managers that are going to resist change. And I think Madeline referred to it as the NIH syndrome or factor, and I think that's true. I have to say that I believe that we have experienced some successes, and particularly recently. I'm as frustrated as Madeline is when we sit in meetings and we come away with an impression that we've made progress. I think Henry Bisson, who Madeline spoke about earlier, was a forward thinker. I think he had some ideas. I think he knew how bad this program, the point that it's reached and that something needed to happen. And he reached out and he embraced this idea that Madeline had set forth for her foundation, and we proceeded to have discussions. Unfortunately, Henry left, and we were in a room with a bunch of people who kept saying, looking at her, saying, yes, we want to do everything we can to help you succeed with this. And then later on, we would see a story which says, well, you know, we said thank you, but no thank you. Well, you know, that's very frustrating. But I will say this, George, we're now, I think, kind of at the top of the food chain, and that's where we need to be. We've met privately with the majority leader on a couple of occasions now, and we're getting very positive feedback from him, and I have every reason to think that he wants to help solve this problem and work with Madeline on the foundation's plan. We had a meeting with the Secretary of Interior, along with Senator Reid, and I thought that meeting went very well too. So, I think now we're moving at a level where we actually can begin to see progress. We're talking about people who can actually make something happen here and recognize that this is a huge problem, and as Madeline said earlier, it's not going away. And all the tinkering that's occurred over these many years with little programs, little side programs here and there, have not proved successful. In most cases, it's been to the detriment of the horses, not to the benefit of the program. So I, you know, on balance, I think that we are making progress now, and there have been frustrating moments, but I think we're moving in the right direction. We're waiting, as Madeline said, for the new BLM director, who's now been officially nominated, and we're waiting to be confirmed, and then we will sit down with him, and hopefully then we can actually begin to talk about the details of the plan and really, really begin to make some progress.
You know, the BLM has said, we have no more room for any horses in our facilities. We're crowded. We can't afford them. And yet they continue to round more of them up. Is there a compelling reason why these horses need to be rounded up from the range? We'll start with you, Madeline, then Jerry, you can answer the same question.
Is there a compelling reason?
Why the roundups have to continue? Is there some danger to the range? Is there is the range is being overgrazed or destroyed by all these horses out there?
Well, let me tell you this. While looking for land, I've come across a lot of land that has not had horses on for many, many years, and the land is totally trashed. So it evidently wasn't trashed by horses. It was just bad stewardship. So, you know, again, I think people that make up stories like that are people with agendas that want to hurt the horses. So they're always going to make up silly stories like that, and actually people pay attention to them. It's just like you had Tom Gorey, who works for the BLM, and, you know, I had some reporters call me, and they had asked him about my plan, and he goes, oh, she's just going to make a lot of money on it. The sad thing is that nobody gave Tom Gorey the proper information to put out. So you can see how stories get started. There's people with agendas, and, you know, let's just be honest from now on. Let's start with a clean page and say, look, we're going to take care of these horses. We're going to do the right thing for this country. We've got a whole brand new government in. Let's clean it up. You know, we're cleaning a lot of other things up. This is one of the cheapest things to clean up. Our program's probably going to cost the government $150 million over the next 10 years, and we'll take care of all of the horses. If you consider that and put it against $1 billion, there's no comparison.
Jerry, you've witnessed these roundups. You've seen them. You've read the documents that supposedly justify them. You know, they used to say, "Oh boy, the horses out there on the ranges are starving. We've got to save them. We got to round them up for their own good." And now they're in a position where it seems like they don't even pretend that to be the case. They just say, "Well, they might starve in the future, so we got to go get them."
Largely admit that there are starving horses out there, George.
It's what?
Largely myth that,
right,
that they're starving horses. These horses, for the most part, are very healthy.
Well, how do they get away with that then? I mean, aren't there standards that would use to justify?
They're driven by a magical number, this called appropriate management level, where they say they just have to be at that number, and that's what drives everything. That's what drives the roundups. That's what keeps them out there saying, we've got to get this many thousands of horses off. Most of the horses that are being gathered are in very good shape, and the BLM has admitted to me publicly. In fact, in a show that we did in Las Vegas, they admitted that. So most of the horses are healthy, and the range is not that bad. Are there instances where, you know, there's tough range conditions and or older horses that are suffering? Well, of course there are. You know, you're going to find that with any species anywhere. But the argument that all these horses are starving and malnourished and just must be gathered is just driven by a number that was created to get rid of horses, to get rid of wild horses.
They have these horse management areas that were set up by the Wild Horse Act long ago, and so many of those now have no horses at all. Am I correct?
That's true. We've zeroed out over 100 areas, and they're now talking about eliminating another 11 up in north central Nevada. It's insane. We've taken away over 20 million acres that was once designated for horse habitat, and It makes no sense, George, that we continue to. And again, it's pitting one species against the other. In other words, the 11 areas they're getting ready to zero out, they have elk, they have deer in them. You know, long before we ever came to the western United States, all of these species lived just fine together, George. They were all compatible, and they remain that way, save for human intervention. It's when human intervention gets involved that somehow we find ourselves picking winners and losers, and the cost is often the extinction of one species.
We heard Madeline make her sort of her pitch for the sanctuary. I'd like to hear yours, why it works, on a couple of levels.
Why the foundation plan works?
Right.
Well, it will work for a couple of reasons, and unlike the other attempts that have been made, there's no profit motive or greed involved in this foundation plan. This is about the horses. This has not been tried before. All the rest of the, as I referred to it earlier, as the tinkering, all these other suggested plans have all had to do with lining somebody's pocket, and solving the horse problem was never the driving force. That's why the foundation plan will work, and it's forever, as Madeline's already described. Once the horses are there, the place can't be taken away. The horses can't, they'll be there forever. That's why this will work, or other plans will not work.
Madeline, one thing you said earlier struck me as interesting. You said that the herd would be non-productive, meaning you're going to have some kind of birth control, I would say. They're not going to be having little horses out there. Wouldn't the herd then die out in 20 or 30 years?
Well, the herds that are being brought to us are not being brought in as a complete herd. They've already been gathered and thrown into different holding pens. So when they come to us, it's not going to be a pure herd. So you've got to, we're not making any herd extinct. Just by gathering them is, where the issue is. But the fact of the matter is they are gathering them. They are stuck in these holding pens. And the whole idea is, let's take care of these horses first. We've got to do something with them. We can't leave them out there. So, here's the solution. I mean, we've got to take care of them. We can't pretend that it doesn't exist.
But, I mean, would they be gelded or?
Of course, that would be the easiest way to do it. But right now there's a good program for sterilizing mares, and it works for about 2 years. The Humane Society believes that they'll come up with a sterilization plan that would be permanent for these mares. And in a sanctuary, that would be fine. So, who is it that they came up with a silly suggestion? Well, what we'll do is we'll take a few stallions out of the herds, and that will help lessen the amount of babies that are born. And I started laughing. I thought, oh, my God, that'd be just like, a group of, one stallion will have as much fun as 10 stallions. He'll just multiply it and just say, oh, yummy. This, instead of me just having two or three mares, now I've got 15 of them, So you can't control birth like that.
Although BLM has tried at times over the years to, they've had money for sterilization programs and hasn't done too well. We can get into that as well when we come back, talking with Madeline Pickens and Jerry Reynoldson about the wild horse program and an idea that might solve the government's problems in that regard and save a bunch of money in the meantime. We'll be back with more Coast to Coast AM. Earlier this month, some documents were obtained through the Freedom of Information Act by some animal activists, wild horse advocates. The documents came from the BLM. It's sort of a manual for their secret plans to kill the horses using barbiturates, gunshots, or captive bolts to the head of the animals. They discussed killing a couple thousand horses a year, and the documents state that the general public would be prohibited from viewing euthanasia procedures. The document also says that security at the wild horse facilities, BLM facilities, and at gathers would have to be increased to combat eco-terrorism, meaning people who are really ticked off about the government killing these horses. When we come back, we'll talk with Madeline Pickens and Jerry Reynoldson about the possibilities of people really getting angry about putting down the wild horses and how to head off the BLM's secret plan. Stay with us on Coast to Coast. Welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Knapp. We're talking about wild horse issues in the BLM's program, supposedly to manage them both on the range and in these government pens. Madeline Pickens, I mentioned in the tease there during the break that these documents had surfaced recently. I think the Cloud Foundation is the one that dug them out using the Freedom of Information Act. Are you familiar with the documents?
Yeah.
And were you surprised by anything you read in these plans for taking out the horses and making sure that the government or the public didn't get to see it?
Well, yes, of course I was surprised. I mean, you like to think that they're not that silly, that they're more humane than that. I mean, most people consider euthanasia just the way you euthanize your pet. You know, it's given a shot and it's put to sleep. It's certainly not, shot. It's not a bolt to the head. It's not poisoned. I mean, what are they thinking? And then they have to worry about security. I would think they would.
Jerry, does it ever get down to the point where they'd actually do this? I mean, can you imagine if the government employees start killing horses and somebody, the video gets out, it hits YouTube or something, how much anger there would be out there?
Well, you certainly can't dismiss out of hand the fact that this could happen at some point. Last year, it actually sounded like it was a real viable option, as you know, George. And a lot of us jumped on planes and headed to D.C. for emergency meetings, because they were seriously discussing this. And while we knew the discussions were taking place, we had never seen the actual documents. And the stark reality of the documents really does shock the conscience. And particularly when you think we never had to reach this point, George. The train never had to have been driven in the ditch to reach the point that we're at, to where we would resort with something so cruel. We've seen pictures of horses hanging upside down and going through the slaughterhouse, and there's nothing kind and gentle about it. And it's a horrific thought, as Madeline said. And yet they had serious discussions, and it's all driven by the fact that they can't come up with any other answers to the program. That's why it's so important that something like the foundation plan that Madeline has come up with be implemented. I mean, this begins to get us on a track to get a handle on this. We declared these horses in the Wild Horse and Burro Act that passed 1971 living historic symbols of the West. Can you imagine that we're going to mass slaughter living historic symbols of the West simply due to mismanagement?
We know that, there are forces in Washington that have wanted to widespread sale of wild horses. The way to get rid of them is just to authorize the BLM to go ahead and sell them. Wink, wink, nod, nod. We'll just sell them to ranchers. But knowing full well that sale authority would mean herds of wild horses would be put into trucks, taken to Mexico or Canada, since our horse slaughtering plants are gone, and they'd be turned into meat, into steaks, right?
Well, that's been tried. The sale authority program that was put in place nearly 4 years ago, which was referred to as the Burns language, has been implemented, and there have been countless instances of where horses have ended up in slaughterhouses. The most recent one is not too far from me here in Nebraska, the Three Seas Ranch. I haven't seen the total death count, but it's somewhere around 80 or 90 horses. They found 65 of them in one pit. And this was a program where somebody applied and said, give me a bunch of these horses. I know how to make money off of them. I'm gonna train them. I'm going to have people come and see them, and expressed all these big ideas. And the guy simply let them starve to death there. And it's a very cruel thing when it happens, and this was another instance of something they tried that didn't work. We have to get beyond the tinkering the things that have resulted in horrible death and cruelty, and move to a plan that will actually work. Madeline's put something on the table that has a chance of that will work, and will take care of a large part of the number of horses that we currently have, if not all of them, standing around, and obviate the need for this discussion about slaughter.
Well, we'll come back to her plan in a minute, but before I leave this idea about slaughter, these wild Mustangs that are in government captivity, they're not supposed to be going to Mexico and Canada for slaughter, but I keep getting emails and notices and calls about it. Do you think that in fact is happening, that somehow they're being smuggled out of these facilities and headed down to somebody's dinner plate?
I shudder to think that may be the case, but I hear this more frequently, just as you do, George. And I think that there have been some instances. Certainly, they're documenting horses being transported across the border into Mexico. James Kleinert has shot film of it. Now, whether or not they're wild horses or not, they have freeze brands on. We do not know that, but it really gives you pause and cause for concern to think that could actually be happening. I'll let Madeline speak to it if she wants to.
Well, Madeline, no, you and I both heard the same stories. We've heard stories about trucks that have come in from out of state. Not to mention, we all know the name. I don't think I'm going to mention it on the air, but that those trucks being seen there, and the only reason they're going there is because they're being taken to slaughter. And why would horses be coming in from another state to go there? So yes, we've all heard it, and I think we're all waiting to see the footage come in now. One good thing that Jerry, I don't know if I told you this or not, but I did get a lovely letter from the Canadian Humane Society with their full support for this program. That says a lot when another country comes on board and says, we want you to know that we're giving you our full support. And, I've thought about this, and I said, maybe what I've got to do is, and easily will be done, is to get several different nations to give me their support, because I've certainly had it verbally, and maybe just get it on paper and take that to Washington, too. Because Washington is a strange little country of its own. They need to have tremendous support. They're very timid and usually not very good at going on their own. So if you come to them with a big army, or as my husband does with his Pickens plan, they stand up and pay attention in a hurry. So I'm feeling good about ours. I could come up with huge numbers and big support from different countries. Jerry, I think that's good, don't you, George? I mean, it shows that other countries are looking at us and saying, what are they doing with this incredible heritage that they have?
Sure. I wanted to talk about the opposition a little bit, Madeline. Obviously, the cattlemen oppose it. Some hunting groups oppose it. Just people who don't like horses in general oppose it, or those who favor the slaughterhouses to reopen. But I will bet you also have opposition from people who love horses too much. They don't want to see horses in a sanctuary or behind a fence. They want them to be left out on the range and everybody just leave them alone, which might be, a beautiful kind of a sentiment, but wishful thinking.
Well, that's fine with me. If they can get the government to do that, I'm behind them.
But that's not going to happen.
But I don't think it's going to happen. So meanwhile, we've got to come up with a plan, first of all, to, save these first 33,000 that are out there, because the numbers are just increasing. What I did hear was that the Forest Service had horses not too long ago that they'd got, and they tried to send them to short-term holding. They were told, forget it. You can't bring them here. So I'm saying to myself, I wonder where they ended up.
Hmm. Jerry, have you run into opposition from the horse lover groups, ones that don't want any kind of restrictions?
Certainly the advocacy community at large want horses left on the range. There's no doubt about that. But I think that there's widespread support for the foundation plan that Madeline has laid out, simply because everyone knows that these horses that are currently standing there in pens, many of which, by the way, have been there for 2 and 3 years, that their fate is so uncertain given their circumstances that without the foundation plan, without something like Madeline's put on the table, they're in serious trouble. Now, speaking to the larger question, yeah, absolutely. We would all like to see more management, on-the-ground management of horses where they're at. And we would like to see a lot of them left where they're at. We want to see viable herds out on the range with the right numbers and the right genetics. But that said, I mean, we've had 30 years of plus of experience in which we've not moved in that direction. So it's kind of hard at this point to think that, you know, somehow there's going to be this this divine awakening and we're going to get there. But the one thing I know for sure, we have got to find a solution to the horses that are standing there, these 30-some thousand horses, and in particular the 11,000 in short-term holding. And that actually takes precedence over everything else. And that's what the foundation plan that Madeline has come up with addresses, is that predicament and that problem. That's the immediate crisis. That's how we presented this, and that's how I presented it in the discussions that I've had. And I think that that's why that the advocacy community does support what Madeline's trying to do.
In general, okay, let's say everything goes well, everything goes perfectly. Madeline is able to take all 33,000 horses that are in captivity. It might take a couple of years to get them all up there, but everything goes well, they're up there. You're still going to have a problem because there's still going to be roundups, right? And you got to have a way to deal with the other horses that'll be coming in.
Yeah, but that's taken care of because there'll be a natural attrition rate, you know, as the horses pass away. Then we'll be able to take in the new gathers.
Well, what I was thinking was the adoption program, something else, you know, the BLM is supposed to manage this adoption program where they encourage people to take these horses off their hands and train them and make them part of the family. And it's been a pretty much a miserable failure, not because it's a bad idea, but because so few resources have been put into it. Do you agree, Jerry?
Well, for the foreseeable future, yes, I think we're going to have an adoption plan, George. Madeline's proposal addresses the issue of all the horses that will be coming off, again, to use the term foreseeable future, of all the unadoptable horses. They will all end up going to the sanctuary that the foundation has, and that solves part of the problem. But no, we will not get away from the adoption program for at least a few years simply because of the fact that the BLM is going to gather anywhere from 5,000 to 7,000 horses a year. And I don't think that the foundation will be able to absorb that many horses on an annual basis. And that at some reason or at some point in the future, you're maxed out there, you know, short of acquiring more land or trying to expand it. But at that point, you know, you're going to have a lot of the advocacy community saying, geez, we should be looking for solutions to leave a lot of these horses out there. But we're going to be adopting horses, I believe, for the next number of years, I think, and we need to make that adoption program work and make it much more efficient than it's been in the past.
In fact, you have some sort of an event coming up.
Well, we have launched the first ever National Wild Horse Adoption Day, which the actual date this year is September 26th. It's going to be a great success because we're creating a new model for the BLM to do adoptions, something I've worked on for years, but I got involved with some tremendous partnerships with the United States Humane Society, the American Horse Protection Association, the National Mustang Heritage Foundation, And the people in these organizations bring collectively, you know, between all of us, probably 100 years of experience dealing with wild horses to the table. They're all extremely talented, along with, I might add, a couple people from the BLM who are working with us on this, who are also very good. And this has been an effort that, at the end of the day, we will have demonstrated how you use the human assets, do advertising, do media, reach out to people to adopt these horses. And again, I think we're going to be doing that for the foreseeable future. I would love to see a time at some point where we were not, where that was not one of the options that was on the table. But as long as we're going to do it, we have to do it better. And we have failed miserably at it. The BLM, Henry Bisson, said it publicly when he was still there. Yes, it's been a miserable failure. Even though there are people in the field offices who think they're doing this very well, we've fallen behind thousands. That, more than any one factor, George, is why we have this backlog of horses, these 33,000 horses. There's obviously other reasons, but, and particularly those in short-term holding, is because the adoption program was not able to keep up with them.
Okay, so if people want to find out more about that event, they go to your website.
There's a National Wild Horse Adoption Day website, and all the information is on there. There'll be like 60 adoptions nationwide on or about September 26th this year, and it's a very exciting program.
Madeline, I'd like to, you mentioned earlier that you had these meetings in Washington, Senator Reid and the Secretary of the Interior, and they've sort of said basically that they're with you, or they haven't committed to it, but they're gonna work with you for the time being.
Yeah, I think what they said was that this is the first time in 30 years that they've seen a plan they think will work.
So what's the next step then? What how do you proceed from here?
We're going to have meetings. In fact, I think we have one in 2 weeks with somebody from the Interior Department. You have to go through all the channels now. Interior, BLM, wait for Bob Abbey to come on board. But meanwhile, you know, there's somebody already designated at the Interior Department that's going to follow through with this. We're going to meet with them, give them all the information they want, and try to get this plan into action so we can do some legislation for it, too. So I'm excited. Listen, it's a pretty pathetic program that's been going on. They need help. They know it. We've got to figure out a way for everybody to save face, basically, is what it comes down to. And, you know, when you're dealing with animals, you sort of go, okay, let's forget our pride. Let's just do the right thing now. That's about all that's left to do, the right thing.
And I guess the next step after that would be buy the ranch, find a ranch.
Yeah, we've located several properties. The problem is, as long as there's a delay with this program and people start getting funny ideas that, you know, maybe we can make more money, they start to get real proud of their land and think it's worth 10 times more than the real value. And they don't realize there's been an economic downturn. Things just aren't worth what they used to be. But... you know, they're still delusioned out there. So, you know, but the several properties we've looked at, I feel confident about them. And the main thing is that we get it into the foundation so that nobody makes money on this. This is not a money-making project.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, the audience will be calling in with their questions for Madeline Pickens and Jerry Reynoldson about wild horse issues and the proposal to create a million-acre sanctuary. Stay with us on Coast to Coast AM. I'm George Knapp.